Hello and good afternoon. Hey, this is Maria Vasquez Boyd, your friend, your pal, every Wednesday, noon to 1 on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is ArtSpeak Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in and joining us either on your radio or online at kkfi.org. Got a full house today, as we always do here in ArtSpeak Radio. We are going to listen to an interview with Josie May, Matt Spezia, Jen Appel, Justin Border, Megan Rouswell, and we have the ever lovely
your friendly neighborhood development director
Bill Sundahl, because, you know, we've got this huge event that's coming up Saturday at the Folly, June 30th, and he's going to talk about that. So,
This Saturday? Oh, June 30th?
I'm going to be out of town.
No, you're not going to be out of town. Maria is going to be on stage introducing some artists at the event, as will about 35 other KKFI programmers.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting.
So, tell us who's going to perform, Bill.
Oh, man.
I know.
You want me to do it, the whole thing? So we have two house bands led by Michelle Bacon and Clint Ashlock, who are both stellar band leaders and musicians in their own right. And so we asked them to back up a whole bunch of different musicians. So some of these artists will be performing themselves, and some will be backed up by the house band. So
now, is that going to include Mark Manning on tambourine?
From the audience, he can play his own tambourine in the very back.
Oh my!
Way in the back, at balcony.
Tell us more.
We are going to have a blast. So the Elders, Julia Othmer, Sarah Morgan, Ernie Locke, Eve Sheldon is coming back to town. And Julia came back to town. Some folks traveled a long way to be here for this event. Kemet the Phantom and Kadesh Flo, Una Walkenhorst, Maria the Mexican, not you. Sorry, that wasn't funny. You're wearing a shirt that says Chicano. Just saying. Sorry. So Maria the Mexican is a band out of Lawrence, Kansas, and they will be joining us. Deepa Reality is a reggae outfit from here in town. Cubanisms, Jason Vivoni and Junebug, and Ernie Locke will all be playing a song together. Joe is a young pop artist here in town. I think she's in her low teens. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to celebrate the history of the station and also kind of the future of what's going to be going on. And Gerald Trimble and Jan Baroque, he's sort of the history portion because he's probably playing a song from 1650 or something like that. So
very cool.
Robert Rodriguez and Greg Concholo are both programmers here at KKFI as well and talented musicians. Bob and Diana Sukiel, same thing. They host the Fool Killer Folk on Sundays. Rosie's Bar and Grill and Dwight Frizzell of BCR, also a KKFI programmer. And Shots in the Night is KKFI's radio play troupe. And so they do a monthly show on Thursday nights, and they'll be doing a live skit.
And I know you mentioned Jason Vivoni and Junebug, who are also DJs.
On
the station too. But
another really cool thing we're doing. Sorry to interrupt.
No.
The KKFI history presentation that Mikhail Shapiro is putting together for us, a brief documentary about the history of the station, and that'll be played during our founders panel. So I'm very excited about this. So that is at 7:15. So the doors are at 7, and all of the literature online says doors at 7, shows at 8, but the founders panel is between that 7 and 8. So 7:15 is when you're going to want to be sitting in your seat, because we're going to have Tom Crane and Gil Werner and Tom Davis, who was the first station manager, and Kathy Peters will be moderating. We're going to ask some other folks to join us as well.
Very cool.
So they're going to talk about the history of the station and answer questions from the audience and just generally have a good time. This is really becoming a homecoming event. Davis came back to town after, he hasn't lived here for years and years, but he said he knew about another 10 folks that were coming back. So spread the word to your friends and family. And at the end of the night, we are going to have a big family photo on the stage. We're going to have a photographer like up in the balcony. Looking down, so we're going to clear the stage and invite everybody who has ever volunteered or been involved at KKFI
to get
on stage.
Right?
Of course, always. That's never not an option.
So this is taking place Sunday, June 30th.
Nope, at the Saturday, June 30th.
Why do we keep saying Sunday?
I don't know why you
Saturday, June 30th at the Folly Theater, and that's downtown.
300 West 12th Street. So down right next to the Marriott. And as a matter of fact, the Marriott is kind enough to offer a special things for our ticket holders. So mm-hmm. since this is a fundraiser for KKFI and they appreciate local businesses, turns out Marriott is a locally owned business.
So they're going to give us a special rate for overnight?
It's all that's at kkfi.org/events. And so, yeah, it's pretty much half price rooms.
So. Yeah, so all you need to know that it's the KKFI 30th anniversary, Saturday, June 30th, at the Folly Theater, VIP 6 p.m., reserved 7 p.m., and KKFI.
History panel, 7:15.
Yeah, that's going to be cool because the research that I've done, I've met some of the founders, and I don't know them all, and I'd like to kind of pick their brains and see, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, 30 years.
I think I'm going to go into the audience and ask, or maybe I can feed this question too. Kathy is going to moderate. Uh-huh. Did it turn out like you thought? Like when you started this station 30 years ago, what did you think it would become in 30 years? Or did you, I wonder if it's...
That's kind of like asking a parent if their child disappointed them. Right?
Well, I don't care what they answer. I'm just curious what it is. I'm still asking it.
I love that. But, you know, for more information, kkfi.org is the place to go.
And that'll take you to the Folly Theater's website where all the tickets are. So you can go directly there as well if that's a faster path for you.
And again, you can see all the performers who are going to take the stage that mm-hmm. night.
Yep.
And so I have a question for mm-hmm. you about the two all-star house bands that are led by Michelle Bacon and Clint Ashlock. Do you know some of the musicians who they've
I'm not certain. So Sam Wiseman, who's a KKFI program, going to be playing drums with Clint. Yeah. I'm not sure who else is in his band. In Michelle's band is going to be John Johnson, Kyle Dahlquist, who is like an all-around wizard. Yeah. Of course, Michelle. Who else did she say? From the MGDs. I'm totally spacing his name out right now. Shoot. The keys player in the MGDs, and then, sorry, dude.
Is Fritz playing drums?
Yes, and Fritz Hutchison is going to be playing drums,
Well, that sounds like a great lineup.
I mean, it's stacked up with stellar musicians. We're not messing around is all I really want to say about it.
So you really don't want to miss this because this is the 30th anniversary. And we are supported by the community. So this
helps
us.
We are the community. This is all I love it. I love my job and I love this place and I'm happy to celebrate it. So please come celebrate it with us. Tickets are as low as $15 and they go up to $30 for really good floor seats. And then the VIP section is $90 and there's only a few of those left. So, and that's from 6 to 7.
And we love you, Bill, for being our development director and doing such a fine job every year and keeping us, moving forward in the next 30 years. 30 years. Good Lord.
I know, right? Let's do 60-year celebration. What's that going to be like?
I hope I'm around.
Let's
hope so. Well, thank you so much, Fran.
Thanks for letting me take over your show for the last few weeks.
Hit the road, mister.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you so much. We love you, Bill. And I'm going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back with Art Speak Radio. Actually, we're going to listen to a song that one of our performers and DJs will be... that was written by... Jason Vivoni. We're going to hear a real quick track and then we'll be back. And that is our beautiful DJ, musician, performer, Jason Vivoni. He's going to take place, he's going to perform at the Folly Theater Saturday, June 30th. And for more information, kkfi.org is the website. I have a couple of things that I want to say. First of all, hello to Mark Allen, who's celebrating International Pineapple Day from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. He will be at the Lead Bank at 1801. He asks that you join him for International Pineapple Day. Pineapple snacks, pineapple selfie booth, the pineapple prize for the best pineapple selfie. And I was happy to partake in that. And just, for a lot of fun. He is going to join us next week, July 4th, for Art Speak Radio, so we look forward to that. Now, I just have a quick introduction. Josie May, who is the curator and executive director at the Spiva Art Center for the Arts at 222 West 3rd Street in Joplin, Missouri. I had an interview, I recorded an interview with her a couple of weeks ago about the Spiva Sketchbook Project, and I was, in full disclosure, I was privileged to be a part of the sketchbook project, and it was just a terrific project that involved a lot of the community and artists and artists across the country. So we're going to hear a interview with Josie, and you know, I just have to tell you that it's a little bit rough because unfortunately I recorded it off my phone. So at any rate, let's hear it.
Viva Art Sketchbook Project. So now that we're sort of at the end of that, with the exhibition and all, just kind of recap how many artists were invited and how many participated.
Sure. I invited 150 artists, and these are people from 25 years of my art life. Just the past couple have been at Spiva, but now I had 25 years of teaching experiences, art experiences, grad school experiences. So I invited 150. 80 replied in the affirmative that they wanted to participate in the project. And 37 of those 80 ended up turning in the final sketchbook.
Now, did the outcome meet your expectations?
Good question. I had so many expectations, but then I had none as well. I think as the project went on, I started to formulate how I wanted things to turn out, sure. But then had to discard some of that along the way. I just wanted the artists to be as authentic as they could be with their work. I didn't want them to feel pressured. I didn't want them to compare to other artists. And they all had different struggles with that, including myself. But that was really my goal, is for them to feel good about completing a project and that they really put some heart and soul into their time.
What were some of the questions you asked of the artists that were at the discussion today? For instance, how did you get that dialogue started? I know you asked them how they began the project. Mm-hmm. What were some of the other questions you asked?
Yeah, I think I tried to focus on the process of the year-long project, because kind of the point of this was that they're not finished pieces of artwork. Mm-hmm. It is about what's happening in their heads. So over the course of a year. So I asked questions like you said, how did you start? But also things like, were you able to keep it up, you know, in a regular routine or habit? Where did you work? Did these things come out in bursts, or did you sit down once a week and carve out some time to do it? Was there a theme running through it? Like what was it that got them motivated and back into the sketchbook over that entire year? So it was more about process.
So Josie, now that the sketchbooks have been turned in, you've received them, you've scanned them, what was the next process that you had to go through?
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at now. We scanned them. We made a catalog that is for sale of just the artwork that's in the show. There's two pieces per artist in the show, even though they had at least 40 images to choose from. Those two images are online on our website, so you could see them there. You can see them in the catalog. The sketchbooks themselves now, and the artists knew this, they are gifts to Spiva. So I will pick a spot in the art center where they will be kept as a collection. Mm-hmm. And anyone can come in and sit down and look at the original work. So because the show will come down in a few weeks of these 74 prints, but the books will be here forever. So now I'm trying to figure out once the show comes down, what is next? Do we just keep a few images online? Keep selling the catalogs? How can we get kind of the most bang for our buck? How can people actually see them on a regular basis? So that's the next thing.
Yeah, and with so many images from the sketchbooks, how are you able to curate the exhibition that you have on the walls right now? Because those images that you chose and how you chose them, they've been scanned, they've been enlarged, they're framed, and they're on the walls. How do you curate that?
It was tough. It took a couple days to look at all 37 portfolios. I did it digitally. I actually looked at the scans. I quickly looked through one person at a time. to get a general feel of what they were doing materially and thematically. Then I looked at each two-page spread very carefully. That's what took the most time. And then I looked through the whole portfolio one more time just to kind of solidify the two that I wanted. For most of the artists, it was pretty clear which two I needed to choose. I wanted them to go together in some way, not with the other artists, but just within their own body of work. So most of them came pretty quickly, and it was fascinating to look at what they were doing. Like one of the artists, she just mostly portraiture of kids. But the two I chose, it was all about elbows and shoulders and knees and kind of how the kids were folding in on themselves versus some of her other poses that were wide open. So just, you know, compositionally and thematically choosing two that seemed to work together.
Well, I know that, you know, again, we're at the tail end of this project. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you've learned? What are some changes you would make if you were to do this, let's say, another couple of years?
Yeah. At the panel, I let people know today that a couple of the artists are, you know, like, when are we doing this again? let me get through the process. You know, once the show comes down, it'll have been almost 2 full years of a project. And even me as an artist or a director, a curator, teacher, I've never done anything this long before, even my own body of work. So I'm not sure what's next with that. I'm just really proud of the outcome. And there are some things I would do differently. I think communication could have been a little bit better with the artists, but when, you know, you're talking about artists from all over the country. And so it's kind of on them to dip into our Facebook group and to communicate with me. But I'm delighted at how it turned out.
So would you share your experience about this project with, say, another gallery? I mean, do you see this as something viable that could happen elsewhere?
Definitely. You know, the impetus for these artists were just the people I knew personally. So, you know, I could have concentrated that. I could have said, I'm from Kansas City. I'm just going to include Kansas City artists. Mm-hmm. Or I'm just going to do this with a certain age group. Like, I just want millennials to do this to see what millennials are thinking right now, you know? Or I just want high school kids to do this. Or it could be a neighborhood project. Mm-hmm. It could be a non-artist project. I really think that some people, that don't consider themselves artists but received a sketchbook could record their lives in some way. So I think there are a lot of applications for this, potentially. I think it's bottom line. It's a community builder,
right?
And I think that this could do that in lots of ways.
And just on a personal basis, Josie, I know you were curating this whole project and really sort of coordinating it all, but you also were a participant. So how did you? And I have to ask you, begin with this sketchbook project yourself?
Yeah, it was hard but I've also been a teacher for a long time, so I'm comfortable with making sure I'm doing what I'm asking of the students.
Right,
so I kind of use that principle here. So, I started off very romantically. I wanted to be able to carry the sketchbook around with me for a whole year and just on a whim pull it out of my bag and, this is what I'm going to sit down for 5 minutes and sketch this. And that it would just be a natural part of my everyday breathing. Yeah. It was not. So I end up being one of those that didn't in bursts. Sure. So 5 or 6 periods of several hours, I would sit down and focus and do several pages of one kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got through it in bursts. Mm-hmm. If I did it again, I still think I would try to challenge myself to really work it into my everyday life instead of the bursts. But that's, more habitual, like brushing your teeth every day. You know?
Well, I find that interesting because I know food is a big part of sort of your work, not only, culinary skills, but just the imagery, too.
Yeah.
Was there that connection really strong in this sketchbook?
It was. And, but it was a conundrum too, because I see my kitchen as a studio as well than my regular art studio. So just time wise, I found myself cooking more, photographing that work.
Yeah.
For some reason, as a visual artist, I felt like just including the photographs of my creations wasn't enough for the sketchbook.
Yeah.
Now that I've never said that out loud, now I might be like, well, it is. It's my photography. Why can't I just print those?
Sure.
Put them in a sketchbook, maybe do some writing about that. That's enough. Instead of trying to do this whole other thing that I did, almost like a third tier of my art food process, you know. So thanks, Maria.
Well, yeah. Thanks, Maria. There's something happening with it. I mean, it's Josie's sketchbook / cookbook / art book.
Yeah, you know, I like this.
You're welcome.
I like this idea, yeah.
You know, and I really have to thank you, Josie, for allowing me to be a part of this project. It's been a wonderful year, and I'm really blessed to have participated in this. And I love seeing the finished work on the walls. And I hope that people will come and enjoy and look at the sketchbooks, take them out one at a time, really enjoy the creativity that your participants brought to this project.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'd love to invite your audience. Come by Spiva and Joplin anytime and see the sketchbooks.
And your website?
Yeah, spivaarts.org.
And I want to thank Josie May, curator and executive director of the Spiva Arts Center, Center for the Arts at 222 West 3rd Street, Joplin, Missouri. And I just want to also announce that the Charlotte Street Foundation is presenting its studio residency program at Spiva Arts Center for the Arts in Joplin. The exhibition will feature current artists in the residency program, Ruben Castillo, Glenisha Johnson, and Rebecca Peck Mogul. There will be an artist panel discussion June 30th at 11 a.m. Saturday, Spiva Center for the Arts. So we're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio after this, and so stay tuned. You're listening to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd with you on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. To that ozone alert, I'd like to ask you to check on your neighbors. You know, make sure that they're okay, and check on your pets and outdoor animals, cats and that sort of thing. Just make sure that they're thoroughly hydrated. Next up, we have Matt Spezia, who is a national powerhouse of lyrical ability, combining a 3-time national award-winning poetry style, Kansas City hip-hop, and thespian teachings. Recently, he signed with CX1 DJs and EE Entertainment. This artist has 2 albums and a book published and has appeared in an anthology CD and book. Now, with his 3rd project, Babylon, releasing this month under professional distribution and management, we want to say congratulations to Matt Spezia. Also, he's here with DJ Butterrock, the manager and executive producer. I do want to mention that Matt uses his platform in his art to promote self-confidence and betterment, social awareness, cultural change, and he has worked directly to influence school children in 26 different districts. He also hosts multiple weekly national award-winning radio shows and was recently named a Prince of Poetry, and all of this while being a proud Washburn University Ichabod. So welcome, Matt.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. It's so glad to have you back here and to meet DJ Butterrock, the manager and executive producer. So
thank you for having me, too.
You bet. Lots happened to you since we last met up, right?
Yeah, it's been...
Catch me
up to speed.
Gosh,
it's been almost 2 years, but getting to come back on here, and you guys do so much for the community. So
yeah, thank you.
In my week of showcasing KC, I brought my manager and label owner up from Atlanta and been really showcasing KC, so this had to be a stop on the list.
So you've had numerous public speaking engagements and motivational projects. Tell us, where do you want to start?
Let's start with the music. I just released Babylon. That's at mattspeziamusic.com. Executive producer DJ Butterrock. It was released from CX1 and E&E Entertainment, Studio 3 Productions. Rod DeMoss recorded it, and Dub C's and DJ 2 Cold produced a lot of the tracks for it. And it's just such a step up from what I've done. It's a truly professional album, and I'm so blessed to have not only this community, but honestly a national community supporting it now. And it's really a dream come true.
So how long did it take to bring this to fruition? I mean, you probably had a lot of work, a lot of sort of demos and that sort of thing. What did it take?
After I released Dual Psychosis, my 2nd album, I immediately started working on Babylon, and it ended up getting enough attention after how well Dual Psychosis did, after the show in Chicago with the Prince of Poetry naming. I met DJ Butterrock through a mutual friend, and we started talking business. And after that, it really started to get rolling. It took maybe a month and a half to get the album completely done after I signed, but we've been working on it for almost a year. So this is actually the second straight year I've been able to release a project in this month.
Wow. And I should also mention that you've recently begun your career in filmmaking, too.
Absolutely. My man DJ Butterrock got me an executive producer and editor role for his movie with Atlantic Records, A Life of a DJ. And I just got back from Jamaica filming The Blackout.
Wow.
I got another movie contract we're working out for me to produce and edit. So it's getting a little bit crazy, but it's really amazing.
So how do you do it all? I mean, you've got DJ Butterrock, the manager and executive producer, and he's got you in all sorts of projects, right?
Yeah, I got Matt working.
Yeah, good.
Real quick, I want to thank everybody for having me, and
sure.
I want to thank Matt Spezia. And I met Matt through a friend from Chicago that's also a poet and a music artist. And Matt was invited to one of my conference calls. We did the CX1 DJs conference call for all the underground artists and poets and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So Matt, he got on a conference call when I first met him. He sat on a conference call for over 2 hours before we even interviewed him. So we got to Matt at the end, and I told Matt, I said, Matt, I'll explain something to you. Most of these artists that's trying to get in the music industry do not stay on the phone for 2 hours. I said, so yeah. You dedicated, man. I played one of his records. And actually, he did a piece on the conference call and then uplifted everybody that was on the call for 2 hours. So I told Matt, I said, hey, man, you dedicated. I want to hear more of you. So he emailed me some of his music, and we liked it. All my people, you know, from the label liked it, and we did other stuff between all that. And I said, you know, then Matt, he wanted to move his career farther. Mm-hmm. He looked me up. I told Matt, I said, Matt, before you even get into any contract, make sure you do your research on who you're going to be doing business with. So it took a couple of months, and then Matt, he wanted to be a part of the team. So. Yeah, I'm glad you're here, sir.
And there you go. You know, I have your CD, Babylon. Shall we hear a little snippet of it?
Yeah, absolutely, please.
Okay, and then we'll talk about it. Wow, wow. You know, if you just tuned in to ArtSpeak Radio, I'm talking to Matt Spezia and DJ Butterrock, manager, executive producer. Matt is a national powerhouse of lyrical ability. We're talking about Babylon, his recent CD that's just been released. So congratulations to you for that. That's your third project, by the way.
Yes,
right?
And
yeah.
Just 3 years, actually. We released Poetry in Motion 2016, Dual Psychosis was 2017, and now we got the first professional album, Babylon, out.
And also, you are the executive producer and editor for the feature-length documentary Life of a DJ, right?
Yep, from Atlantic Records and DJ Butterrock.
Yep.
And international videographer.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just got back from Jamaica shooting a wedding.
Is there anything that you have your sights set on beyond what you've done so far? And because you seem to like to really challenge yourself and kind of push things forward.
Yeah, I'm involved in just a lot of different stuff between graphic editing, videography, music, artistry. I host some radio, and I'm also, you know, developing an IP to really change the way people interact with downtown areas. And so I'm doing a little bit of everything, and this man's helped me facilitate quite a bit of it.
It seems like a really strong, a powerful partnership between you two.
It really is.
Yeah.
This guy right here, man, he's 22 years old. I've been in the music game since the early 80s. So working with him is, it's a beautiful feeling, because Matt works harder than a lot of artists I know. I work with a lot of major artists, and he worked harder than a lot of major artists I'd be in the studio with. And I told Matt, I said, Matt, you are a star, number one. You don't sell a million of copies of this if the city don't come together and support them. Because at the end of the day, I'm gonna say this brief conversation, because Matt know I'm going to say it. Matt, I told Matt, we're going to do the release party in Atlanta, Georgia. He said, no, I'm from KC, so I want to get back to my people.
Good.
The label didn't want to do it here. Matt said, no, I want to do it in my city. So we respected that. We didn't want to change nothing he wanted to do. So we did it here. And I told him, I said, well, if everybody come together and buy this album, you'll go platinum. So that's our job, to hopefully make this guy go platinum. He worked hard. So anybody can hear my voice, it's DJ Butterrock, CX1 DJs. This guy, Matt Spezia, he's a good guy. He's a good man. He's a good brother. and I'm hoping everybody could buy this album and support him.
Now, Matt, give us some information about contact information, social media, websites, so our listeners can take a look.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on whatever your primary social media is at Matt Spezia, S-P-E-Z as in zebra, I-A. You can also find all my music, upcoming events, bio information at mattspeziamusic.com. You can connect with my label at CX1. You can also get a hold of them at 404-552-8731 for booking information. Mm-hmm. And we go everywhere. We travel all mm-hmm. over. So, mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you real quickly, what is the next event or outing you'll have that you want to share with our listeners?
So the next one that I have will be the 9th Annual Dub Seas Underground Music and Poetry Awards up in Chicago. That's July 13th through the 14th. I'm nominated in four different categories, but I'm only going for three awards. That's Hardest Working Artist, Spoken Word Artist of the Year, and Underground Artist of the Year.
Terrific. Well, you know, congratulations to you. You are really hardworking, and in the short amount of time that I've known you, it's like, yeah, you've got a pretty full list of things that you've accomplished. So many happy wishes for you.
It's all a team effort. We don't do any of this alone. Without people like you, without people sharing flyers, buying albums, we're in a dark room yelling to the wall. It's all a team effort.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Matt. You will be back sometime soon. You know, we'll have a little bit longer, and you can play some. We'll play some more of your music and talk.
Well, thank you so much for having me today.
You bet.
Like I said, you always do so much for this community, so it's a real blessing to get to sit with you.
Oh, you're very welcome. And DJ Butterrock, nice to meet you. It's so good to meet you and hear your encouraging words for this young man who's very talented. DJ Butterrock, manager, executive producer, thank you so much. And you'll be back, too.
Thank you. I will always be back. Matt, I love you, Matt. I love you. I'm going to say that on live on the air, man.
Hey, man, it's all love between us.
We love that. Thanks so much. We're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio after this. Ooh, sorry about that. I think we had some dead air there. I don't think my laptop was working. So let me see if I can get this going again. Not going to happen. Well, I tell you what, we're going to go on to our next guest. We're going to forget the music because sometimes I like to play some transitional music as we go to one guest from the other. We've got Jan Appel, who's going to bring in a couple of her colleagues with her. Let's see. I have Justin Border and Megan Rosewell, who are going to, they're going to talk about weaving the river. And let's ask Jen and Justin and Megan, what's going on with weaving the river? Welcome, my friends.
Thank you very much for having us.
You bet. So, tell us how weaving the river came about and sort of what it involves there, Jen.
Okay, so we started off with the idea of weaving the river based on some experiences that I had while I was working on the Red Line comic book for Community Health Council of Wyandotte County. I had never really known the history of Quindaro, mm-hmm. and I'd come to... while doing research for the comic book, I'd come to the old Quindaro Museum. And in my mind, because of what I'd seen on the news cycle, Quindaro always had sort of a negative connotation. It was always kind of associated with crime or with poverty. And with all of that negativity, it seemed to me, especially after learning more about it and spending time with Anthony Hope at the old Quindaro Museum, that we needed to do something to bring the true history of Quindaro to light. And at the time, I was in Artist Inc. with Megan and with Justin and Jillian Youngbird, who isn't actually here with us. And we had talked about, in our small group, doing a project together. And while we were meeting about our Pecha Kuchas, we actually, I told them my experience that I'd had while learning about Quindaro, and it just seemed to all make sense. It all seemed to kind of come together. Megan has got a sort of otherworldly understanding of Ikebana and spatial placement, and Justin's got this love of river plains, and Jillian's got folklorists' mind when it comes to her art and her sensibilities. And I created my first soundscape, which I actually have renamed a collage auditif, mm-hmm. Because it's really storytelling through sound. So we've got it currently installed at the Community Health Council of Wyandotte County, and we have a closing reception this week. But we could talk more about that. Do you have any questions? I feel like I'm talking a lot.
No. You know, I just want to kind of go back and again emphasize the history of Quindaro. You know, it has such a rich and deep American history. Native Americans, abolitionists, they formed the township.
Feminists.
I'm sorry?
Feminists. Yeah. Clarina Nichols was one of the editors at the Quindaro Chindoan, and she was a real hardcore feminist in 1856.
Wow.
It's so, kind of mind-blowing.
And you mentioned in the liner notes that I have in front of me, you were led to the old Quindaro Museum,
mm-hmm.
and that's an existing building, or
is it
some sort of remnants that you could pull a history from?
Yeah, actually, it's just a little house down the street from the Allen Chapel. I know that you can find it online, and actually, you do need to make appointments to get in there to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's rich and ripe with history, and one of the most sort of like visceral experiences for me on that day when I went through the museum was at the very end when Mr. Hope said, oh, hold on a second, I've got one more thing to show you. Mm-hmm. And out of a very innocuous looking little tote bag, he pulled out actual shackles that were used to enslave and keep people.
Wow.
And so, and his wife is yelling from the car, nobody needs to see that. And I'm like, no, I need to see it. We all need to see it. We need to remember how terrible we can be to people. And one of the things that's sort of, you know, kind of continues to reverberate through this whole thing is that the town founders back in the 1800s, kind of the 1850s, had this sort of vision in mind of this almost utopian society where everybody could live together. One of the things that we haven't touched base on is that, yes, Quindaro was founded by abolitionists in Wyandotte, named for the daughter of a chief, Quindaro, which literally means stronger together.
Mm-hmm.
The name Quindaro means stronger together. And it was a hub on the Underground Railroad because here is Kansas, which is a free state across from Missouri, you know, the Parkville and all of the plantations that were over there. And they were ushering in runaway slaves and keeping them safe. And there's so much more history than just the original history of Quindaro.
Well, and with this project, Weaving the River, you brought to light sort of, again, the history. You've highlighted that history and created an immersive installation to awaken the interest in this incredible history to a new generation. And with Justin Border and Megan Rosewell and Jillian Youngbird, you were able to do that through music and all. So, Justin, you want to talk about that?
Mm, yes.
About your role?
Because the story of Quindaro is really under-recognized, even for a lot of people within Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas City, Missouri, throughout the nation. So we really enjoyed with our project that we could kind of help bring the story of Quindaro out and like kind of add a spotlight to it and kind of interpret all of the research that we've done for it to just show all of this history in a light and kind of get people to think about the history of Quindaro and maybe be another like entree into that history.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's sort of, you know, with your role in this, does it give people a lot to sort of meditate on or to think about or to kind of consider versus what they think they know of Quindaro, of that particular area?
Yeah, I think so. And it's good, too, because our installation was at the Quindaro Symposium in Memorial Hall in KCK, mm-hmm. and then now it's at the Community Health Council in KCK. So I think it's really great that we've been able to showcase our project within the community and with community members. We have a lot of speakers from Reverend Stacy Evans with the Allen Chapel Church. Mm-hmm. Marvin Robinson spoke, and then we also have
Ty Edwards
from JCCC. Mm-hmm. And this Friday, for our closing, we have the Elder Statesman of Kansas City Jazz Small Big Band.
Yeah, little
kind
big
of
band.
A little big band. They have kind of a long name. Who will be performing also?
So Justin, Megan Rosewell, and Jillian Youngbird are the Poly Artery Collective, right?
Yeah, we all are.
You all are. Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. So let's talk about that, the Poly Artery Collective. What did I say that right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
you did.
You're laughing. I'm like, what did I say?
We're just giggling.
So do you want to talk about that, Megan?
We decided to give our group a name because we were so in love with kind of each other's different art. Yeah, like poly art, artery collective. And yeah, when we heard about the project from Jen and we saw her passion for it, we really wanted to come together and take each of our individual talents and see what we could do to really, help bring the project together. So Jen created the soundscape. It's part of the immersive part of the installation. Justin did the infographics, and then he also created the topography of Kansas. So, and then because Justin is a Wyandotte County resident, and he lives in Kansas. I live in Missouri. I'm actually a military spouse, so I'm not really from here, but willing to learn a whole lot. And so I created the Missouri topography, and then we have the Jillian Youngbird wove the river that goes between the two different, between Missouri and between Kansas. Mm-hmm. And as a way for the crowd to interact, we have a tree where you can write wishes for the Quindera community, and then we're going to ceremonially release them into the Missouri River at the end of our installation.
And so, the tree is actually kind of part of the history in itself, because when it was safe, when bounty hunters were not kind of, coursing along the river, the river looking for people who were escaping, they would actually have tied fabric to the tree to say, hey, it's safe, or no, it's not safe. So it's it's kind of an homage to that, to the signal tree.
Oh, yeah. So if you just tuned in to ArtSpeak Radio, I'm talking to Jen Appel. I also have Justin Border and Megan Rosewell here. We're talking about weaving the river. And I want to say that, in the liner notes, you write, the piece that I created is more of a sonic epic poem than music. Woven within the piece are sounds that I collected, created, recorded, and manipulated. The river, feet walking through grass, birds, wind, hammers, saws, chains, voices, some elements pure, some highly distorted, like the history of this place. So then you ask the listener to answer these questions. What do you feel? Close your eyes. Imagine the journey of two displaced peoples and what they did to build a community, which I think is really beautiful. As far as the music goes, it's sort of a collage in four parts. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. So it starts off with a sort of in the beginning, which is an homage to the Wyandotte creation myth. It's in the beginning, there was only water. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, it's like, wow, this water in this land was there before anybody even, touched it from either the abolitionist or the Wyandotte side. And actually, the land was transferred. I think we've learned like four or five different times between Native people before the Wyandotte actually settled on this land. Mm-hmm. So there's that part. And then there's the diaspora, because the Wyandotte were forced to move from Ohio to to this land, which was bequeathed to them by the government. And then it talks about moving, or it gives a nod to moving into actually trying to build in this space. And then Warp and Weft, where we met, which is how all of these things come together. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, it comes into what feels almost a little bit darker. I actually culled through I don't know how many letters from Abelard Guthrie, who is one of the town founders. And it was kind of remarkable to me at how many things that he wrote back in the mid-1850s that still resonate and make sense today. Like, there's never been a greater moment than this for Wyandotte. We're so close. Like, over the course of the years, and some of these things have just been brought to light for us over the course of the last couple of weeks. But Quindaro's always kind of been on the cusp of, like, really having a strong foothold. And it's just always seemed to be a slight miss, and and we saw an article from the 1920s where, like, oh, Quindaro's going to be recognized, and this is just 70 years, less than 70 years after the original township. And then,
and now here
in the 1930s, right, in the 1930s again, an article that says, hey, we're so close. So it feels like we might be just at that moment of critical mass where there's enough interest, and there's enough bodies. There's discussion at this point about actually, and it could be pretty close. I mean, it's a 2+ year process, but that Quindaro is actually going to be noted as a national historic landmark.
Beautiful.
So there is this sort of difference in the movement, and if we can help in any way be part of that tipping point where it goes from just, you know, sort of like a hidden, overgrown history here in Kansas City to a beautifully revered and honored space, not just of the space itself, but of the people who founded it and the people who still live there, who still, you know, try to thrive in that space. I feel like that would be the greatest, you know, outcome for any of this project.
And I want to ask about the website for our listeners so they can gain more information. Perhaps listen to some of the audio with that.
There is audio available on the GeoTourist site. We're actually part of a walking tour. It's geotourist.com, I think. And you could just type in Waving the River and it'll come up. But it's part of the West Bottoms Reborn walking tour series.
And then quickly, the closing reception is this weekend?
It is this Friday.
And that's going to be where?
It is at the Community Health Council at
803 Armstrong
Avenue in KCK from 6 to 8 p.m. And then we will be at Inner Urban Art House also August with the opening reception of Friday, August 17th. Is that a Friday? It's August 17th.
Yeah, it's a Friday.
I'm not sure of the day.
Well, this sounds like a very deep and just a really powerful project that you've brought forth to us. So thank you for that. And I know you, Jen, well enough that there's more to be had with this. So
we just keep on plugging. We keep on making community connections to try to strengthen and push this forward.
Yeah, we love that. Well, thank you all so much for coming in today. And I know we'll hear more from you down the road. So thanks so much for coming in. And you feel better soon because I know you were kind of
You're
on the mend, right?
I am way on the mend.
Terrific. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Maria.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. I also want to thank Josie May, again, Jen Appel, Megan Rouswell, Justin Border, Matt Spezia, Bill Sundahl, and next week, July 4th, the 4th of July, we've got Jonah Criswell, who will be in studio, and Mark Allen, who will also be here. Stay tuned next for Jazz Afternoon. I believe we've got a sub in for him. That's Mark Andrasel. He's going to spin you some great tunes. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we really love you, and honey, I'm coming home.